All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction. This is Andrew. I am joined here today by Alex Kirshner. She is a psychedelic guide out of, was it Otis, Massachusetts?
Yeah,
That's a terrible name for a town. I say that as a person with a fellow from a hometown with a terrible name for a town. My town's name is Loomis.
Okay.
So
right.
Also bad.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
But how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. This is the new podcast studio. We've only done two episodes in it.
I like it.
But it's coming along. I like it a lot. No one listening can see it right now because I don't have any audio of it. I'm just doing audio today. But we'll show it eventually.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good place. Good vibes in here.
Thank you. So yeah, we'll see where this goes today. But Alex and I just met last night at a EDM show that both of us kind of apparently didn't plan on going to really, and like just kind of. I have a feeling the name of this episode will be called Synchronicity.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't really know where the conversation will go today.
Yeah.
But why don't we just
let's get into it.
Get
yeah.
along the road.
Well, I mean, I think it's a great place to start with how we met last night at that show that we both ended up leaving.
Right. Yeah.
And did not actually seeing the artist play, but we ended up meeting each other and having an interesting conversation that led to us doing this podcast today, which is
absolutely
sick.
Yeah. That's the best way to do things.
Yeah.
Just kind of random with synchronicity.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
So I had mentioned at the top, you're a psychedelic guide.
Psychedelic guide.
Give me a little bit about like the brief of what that entails.
Yeah, so I was trained at the Center for Medicinal Mindfulness in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
So I used to live out here before I moved back to Massachusetts. And I was trained to work with cannabis, psilocybin, and ketamine as the psychedelic medicines.
Okay.
I have been doing this for about 4 years. And so what I do is I work for Mindbloom, which is a remote ketamine company.
Right.
And
okay.
I have clients that I help integrate their ketamine experiences. So
really?
I do that
That's awesome.
On the daily. And then I have my own practice called Higher Healing. And I have people come
Shout
to
Higher Healing.
Yeah, Higher Healing.
Mm-hmm.
I have people come to my space in Otis.
Okay.
And they do medicine sessions with me there.
So, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I work with cannabis mostly as the psychedelic medicine. I also work with psilocybin as well. And those sessions are really beautiful. I mean, I don't know how much you want me to go into and how the sessions
All
run.
The way.
And yeah. So I had so when I have a client, we'll meet for prep. Mm-hmm. Before the session. So we'll talk about their goals, their intentions, what they want to receive from the session. And then we'll go ahead and we'll meet for the session where we'll have the ceremony. We'll imbibe the medicine, whether it's cannabis or the psilocybin tea. And I will guide
you. Oh, you guys do the tea?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So what I do with the tea is I'll have clients dose. We'll agree on their dose. So, we'll just say 3 grams would be a dose for a client.
Sure.
It's based on height and weight, but we'll just say 3 grams. The first, during the ceremony, I would give them 1.5 in a tea form.
Okay.
And then
kind of a starter.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And within the hour from that dose, they'll be asked if they want to take their booster dose, which will be the entire, you know, rest of the 1.5 or half or none of it at all. So the client really has that opportunity there to see where they're
go
at.
Go further.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really their choice at that point. And so after that, the client's laying down. They have an eye covering on. And I have psychedelic music that plays. So there's lots of psychedelic music playlists and things that you can find on Spotify. And I
made
have
a couple of them myself.
Yeah. East Forest. Shout out East Forest. I really love love his music. I'm going to see him in Boston next weekend, actually.
He's going
to set out there.
Cool.
But yeah, so the music really guides the whole experience. You know, I'm there as the anchor. I'm there as the guide. I'm there to, you know, help keep the grounded nervous system in the room, you know, be that anchor for the client energetically. So that's where all my training really is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And I'm someone that has benefited from psychedelic therapy myself. Mm-hmm. I did the ketamine treatment for, I guess, the injections for about a year, once every 3 weeks. Started, of course, with that, like, one, you know, rapid succession one. And then, like, once, like, a re-up, like, every 3 weeks to a month.
Okay.
So the incident that happened to me, and at this point, we are, like, it's one of those things that, like, ruined me at the time, but made me stronger in the end type thing. I got into a fight when I was about 23 and got stabbed, like, 6 times in the head, neck, like, should have died. For sure should have died.
Wow.
Something, like, kept me alive. I don't know what it was. But, like, I lived from that. And for a while, it was, like, I went back into drinking. I, like, started doing cocaine again and, like, you know, really just, like, ruining my life. Almost got homeless type thing. If I wasn't living in a $400 a month rent apartment, I would have gone homeless. Like, it was just, like, just the worst situations. And then started doing the treatment about after that happened in 2019. So, of course, 2020 hits. I, like, the thought in my mind at the time was, I died when that happened, and I'm still living in this body, but I'm in hell. Mm. And that was, like, a legit thought in my mind. Amy, get out of here. Amy, lay down. And we're back. Sorry. Had a little bit of dog problems. So I did the injections, and they also gave me the nasal spray.
Okay.
And Spravato, whatever the hell it is. But I was getting it from, like, a compounding pharmacy, because it was still, like, borderline legal.
Right.
And for the year, basically a year and a half, I was just on the fucking moon doing the Spravato at home myself, fucking doing injections once every month, and then moved out here after that, and then came to a place eventually with ketamine where I was kind of examining. It felt like it was a weird trip because it felt like I was in a computer program. And I was going through a list of all the drugs that I was using at the time. What does this do for you? Why? What is? Do you have a problem with it? Type things. And I got to alcohol. And it was like, this is killing you, was the first thing it gave me. The second thing is this is making you crazy. And the third thing I got was, if you don't stop right now, you are going to die of a stomach cancer, liver failure, whatever it is.
Wow.
And then I went into a darker place where I was living the trauma again. I was back in the place where I got stabbed. It was dark. I was watching myself get stabbed from a third party view, and just, like, went down on the ground and just, like, laid with myself as I was laying there bleeding, and was like, dude, I love you. I'm sorry. Pull through. And, like, as I said that, and then I was like, I forgive you. And then it was kind of like a God save me type thing. And then it was like, it felt like a physical weight, like, left me. Mm. And it was gone. Mm. And just never really came back. And it was like a hate for myself that I had had before that I had just let go of. And that night, I quit drinking. I haven't had a drink since.
So how long into your ketamine therapy did this experience happen?
I'd say about 2 years. And that was with street ketamine, if I'm being honest.
So 2 years from starting to do ketamine is when you came to this. And you've been sober from alcohol for 2 years now.
It's about 2.5, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, coming up on
A
couple months, yeah.
Okay. So the medicine really, over time, led you to that realization.
Yes. So the first experience with it was, like you said, like a starter dose.
Yeah.
And they put a blindfold on me, and I actually usually would refuse the blindfold from this point. Mm-hmm. It didn't scare me, but it was like, I think I can do this without it. And, cause I liked closing my eyes and seeing what was behind my eyelids on that. It's the best.
Oh yeah.
But, because there's a whole thing going on in front of your eyelids, in front of your eyes, but there's a whole thing going on behind your eyes too. So it's crazy. I remember going to this place where it felt like I was in Staples Center in LA, where the Lakers play. I was at the very top row because I've sat there before. I've been at the very, very top row at Staples Center. It's a very strange feeling. It's so high up there. So I'm like looking down at this arena and I realize I'm watching two people wrestle from like the very top row. I'm like, that's great. And I get closer and closer and closer with my vision. And I realize that both people that are wrestling are me. And I'm like, okay. And then I look around in the stadium and everybody else in the stadium was also me. And it was like, it gave me the feeling like, we're about to look into who you are. Get ready type thing. Like, if you keep going down this road, it will show you who you are and allow you to have, the way I've said it before is like, it allows you to have therapy with yourself.
Correct.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So it sounds like, so that experience seems like it could be interpreted or seen as, you know, you at battle with yourself internally and like this really big internal battle. And you, you know, I think I've wrestled this with this in my own life is just getting in my own way, you know, and making things more complicated than they need to be, or like
certainly
whatever it is, right? And that's putting it, I guess, a little simply, but in the case of like substance use and you mentioned forgiving yourself, because there's so much shame and guilt and like just that surrounds substance use, right? Mm-hmm. And but it's like, what's the reason why we're using the substances in the first place? It's, you know, it's not necessarily the substance. Gaber Mate talks a lot about this. It's not, don't ask why the addiction, ask why the pain.
Yep.
And so you being able to get to a point of forgiving yourself in order to, like, the forgiveness allowed you to release the alcohol.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like anyways.
Yeah. Well, because that was why I was drinking. To cover up what I thought was a personality defect, maybe. Because you know, I grew up, you said you did too. I grew up in a small town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things about small towns is that if you don't fit in with like the clique, you're kind of outside of the major.
Oh, you are.
And so like, I've always been fucking weird, man.
Same.
I've always
felt like an oddball too.
Almost everywhere I've been.
Except Colorado.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much except Colorado.
Yeah.
But I've usually felt like out of place.
Same.
And I think I drank to fit in and, you know.
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that. So, you and I were talking, I have struggled with addiction in the past too. I've been sober from opiates for 10 years and a big...
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
We have one thing for you here. I think it's this one.
Ah, nice. Cool.
Also, real quick, this is not a recent addiction, but I like to say this podcast is sponsored by McChrystal Snuff.
Okay.
It's not at all, but it's it definitely is at the same time, because it wouldn't be possible without this fucking shit. It's like sniffing tobacco.
I see.
Dude, it's
interesting.
I got addicted to it about 3 years ago, and like I call it diet cocaine.
I think I've tried that like once or twice, honestly.
It's a decent time.
Yeah.
It's not like, it doesn't like get you high, but it definitely is like a nice little
rush. Yeah. All right. Well,
but yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, exactly.
But, So big reason why I started using at the very young age of 15, 16 years old.
That was when we started using opiates?
That's when I started using drugs in general, sure. Right? But it was, I spent my whole life being so shy and feeling so like such an oddball and like I didn't fit in. So when I started using drugs, I started being able to be myself around people and people liked me. Yeah. And it was like, whoa. And so then the drugs became an access to like, felt like it was the access to people liking me fitting in.
Right.
So it became
toxic.
Yeah, and it became a reason, like a reason to use, you know? Yeah. And so I would get stressed out before going out in social situations, being like, I can't go if I don't have a substance because no one's going to like me.
Oh,
you know what
boy.
I mean? And then there was this whole fear about getting sober and no one liking me when I was sober. You know what I mean? Which honestly kind of happened, because when I did get sober from opiates, one of my really good friends was like, Alex, what's going on with you? Like, you used to be like so fun. Like, what's happening to you now? And I'm like, ugh. He didn't know at the time what he had no idea, because I kept my addiction very private from as many people as I could.
Yeah.
But it's definitely been a journey. It continues to be a journey of, you know, just allowing myself to be seen in this world, you know, as who I am.
And I'm glad you do.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Did you ever go to rehab?
No, I didn't. I did not. I went to a Suboxone clinic.
Okay.
And I was on Suboxone for about 6 years.
Okay, nice. And that seemed to help?
Oh, I mean, it just saved my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, being an opiate addiction is just unlike anything else.
It's hell.
It's just hell on earth. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just don't know how you got there, because no matter how badly you want to get sober, you can't function without the drug. So you can't work. You can't do anything that you would be doing. And then you're terrified of going through the withdrawals. So it's just this impossible situation that you end up in. So the Suboxone saved my life, and then it became a ball and chain over time.
I hear that's the route for that.
Yeah.
I hear that's the same route for methadone as well.
Right.
And I watched a bunch of my friends go through the traps of that, and some of them lived and some of them fucking are not here anymore.
Yeah.
One of my best friends, Malik, died about, I guess, coming up on 3 years now. And a little bit past 3 years now, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, like a brother to me. Yeah. But, you know.
It's so sad.
Yeah. I feel like I had mentioned with my dog when you first came in, like I named her after a friend who passed from an overdose as well, Amy. And, you know, it sucks to think about your friends that are no longer there, but at the same time, you got to carry them with you somehow. I'm a writer. Like, I spend a lot of my time writing, and in the stories that I've written, a lot of my characters are named after friends.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, at least in some way, shape, or form. Like, Malik, I don't name people Malik. I call him Moose, because that was his nickname.
Right.
And there's always a dog or a character or something named Moose in all of my stories.
And that's...
Since he died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a really beautiful way to allow them to sort of live on and allow them to make an impact on us.
Right? Well, the idealized version of them too gets to live on. It's a version of him that gets to live on in this world without his problems.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful gift to both of you.
Yeah, it is. He helped me a lot in my time. I was talking about this yesterday actually with someone that. I was living in Texas during a big snowstorm there a couple years ago. I don't know if you heard about that. It was like, it got to like -2 in Texas, which feels like -30 anywhere else. And like, it was covered in a fucking 2-inch layer of ice, the whole state. Texas is huge. I don't know if you know that, but it's like, but the border to border was covered in ice.
Wow.
So very strange for Texas. And Amy was 3 months old at the time, and my power went out. It was 28 degrees inside my apartment. She was going to freeze to death, and Malik just fucking shows up at my apartment. He's like, I got power, motherfucker. Come in the car. Like, let's get out of here, dude. Takes me to his apartment, and fucking sure enough, we stayed there for, you know, I stayed there 5 days, I think, till the power came back on.
Wow. Good friend.
Yeah. Like, one of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that people... passing, you know, it's big lessons for us that they leave behind, you know, and whatever that means for them on their journey. But I think it's like this greater purpose that they leave the impact. My sister passed away when I was 19.
Sorry, what was her name?
Remy.
Okay.
Yeah. She made such a huge impact when she died. Like, she was 17 when she died.
Yeah.
And we had to have 2 funeral services for the amount of people that showed up.
Oh,
and
we live
in a very small town.
Yeah.
So there were towns that came to this. Towns.
That's amazing.
You know? And she made this huge impact. And not only did she make this huge impact on everyone, but she made this huge impact on me, right?
Of
making me wake up to ask the bigger questions.
Yeah.
And to start moving towards this path that I'm on now, which has been quite the journey over the last 13 years, because that's how long she's been gone. Yeah. But yeah, it's been, that was really the catalyst to it, is her. And because of her, I've been able to help so many people, including myself.
That's the best. Well, that's the first one that's got to come.
Right.
You can't help anybody else until you've taken care of what's yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
And dealt with the issues that, you know, you've got and you know are internal. And then once, you know, you've externalized those into a point where you're like, okay, that's not really an issue. Right. I still am who I am, and I love that person. Right. So it's like, once I got to that point, I truly was like, I don't really give a shit what anybody else thinks.
Well, because you can, like, have compassion for your, even the parts that aren't so beautiful, like, right. You know, and they can become beautiful just to, like, you can have compassion and forgiveness and acceptance of yourself. Absolutely. Which then allows you to have that for other people. Like, one of my favorite quotes is, as above, so below.
Right.
Everything that's within us, everything in our internal world is reflected in our outer world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I never took that. I never really, like, thought about that saying, because I've obviously heard that saying, but I've never really thought about that like that before. That's really interesting.
As above, so below, yeah.
Whatever you internalize, you will externalize.
It's just a reflection. Our external world is just a reflection of our internal world.
That's very true.
Period.
That's very true.
Like, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
One of the things I got during an LSD experience when I was, like, living in San Francisco was, everything that is has an equal and opposite reaction or reaction to the interaction you're having with it. Mm-hmm. So it's like everything, it was basically quantum physics in my head.
Right,
it was basically everything is going like this at both times.
Correct.
And like everything's going left and right and then straight and down and left and fucking everywhere at all times. And it, like, that was something that, like, basically told me, like, okay, you need to do something positive for your life. And immediately, like a week later, I went to rehab for the first time. Because I was like, I guess it was the second time. I went when I was 18 because my parents, like, caught me doing drugs. Caught me selling drugs, really, in college. And I was like, it was the whole thing. But I went for like 2 weeks and then I was like, yo, these people are crackheads. Like, I'm just here. I just do acid sometimes, bro. Like, what are you talking about? I wasn't even a big drinker yet.
Right.
It's like, I'm in the wrong place, man. And it kind of was the wrong place because it kind of brought me down that road of that, like,
yeah, because you're programmed to believe, oh, I'm an addict, or I'm, you know, and
it's also like, well, those people they just made bad choices. I'll make the right choices doing this. And it's like,
yeah,
because they were good people.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. All of the people I've ever, well, almost all, most of the people I've ever met in a rehabilitation center were good people. Good people that just made bad decisions.
Most people are good people.
Yeah, I think so too.
Most everybody.
But like, that's a good point. It's very few that's like, I think this, I don't know what the actual, like.
But it.
Amy, get out of here. Baby, stop.
It is funny thinking about the people that we meet in these places, because we're programmed to assume that they're bad people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and like, because they've either made mistakes and you're like, they live by those mistakes, like in terms of like their reputation is based on those mistakes, but like that's the beautiful part about those places is that, like, you go to a rehabilitation center, nobody knows you.
Right.
Nobody knows you.
Well, you're lucky.
I was the type of person that would just get the fuck out of state, dude. I would go to some different state to go to rehab every time.
Yeah, like, you have to. If you're from a small town, forget about it.
No, I went to Texas twice and then Arizona.
Okay.
And then once in Sacramento, but that was the 18
one. Just a rehab tour. You
know? Yeah, pretty much over about 6 years.
Nice. Yeah.
So I guess 8, because I was 18 to 26 four times between then.
Wow.
And I guess it worked.
I mean,
it kind of was the work that I did on it. Yeah, that's kind of what it is that nobody realized. Rehab's not going to make you fucking better. Hold on 1 second. There's a woman that may or may not be listening to this podcast. She knows who she is. You have to make the fucking work and decision yourself.
Yeah.
You can't just expect a rehab trip to fix everything. You have to be the one to do the work on yourself.
Exactly. Same with a psychedelic trip.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Same with a psychedelic trip.
Yeah, you know? It's not going to just fix you.
It's not. Unless you take that learning, you take those insights, those learnings, you implement them into your life, you reprogram your brain, you utilize that neuroplasticity mm-hmm. that's present from the psychedelics.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, because then, I mean, like, it, you speak about neuroplasticity. Like, mm-hmm. it does rebuild, like, taking these substances really does, I believe, rebuild some parts of your brain, new pathways.
It scientifically
But it
does.
Just structure, it's just structure. There is nothing inside, I don't believe, just based on that, of the new structure. You have to fill it in. You know what I mean?
Well, like, you have to continue. So the way I describe it with my clients is, like, we think about building a muscle. We think about lifting weights consistently to build that muscle. If we stopped lifting the weight, the muscle is going to decrease and then weaken, right? Mm-hmm. So the same with neural connections. When we are building new neural connections, unless the weightlifting is the integration. So it's the constant connection and reconnection with the information, insights, learnings that you experience during these big experiences.
Right.
And how much can you keep connecting with that? Mm-hmm. And not just connecting with the information, connecting with the feeling in your body, connecting with that is the biggest piece. The mm-hmm. body and the mind having that knowing right. connection and allowing that to continue being experienced outside of the psychedelic session. That's what allows that reprogramming to happen and that mm-hmm. neural connection to really build and strengthen. Because we've built so many neural connections in our brain just like have, you know, just by
living
and not being aware that we're doing it, you know, yeah. like not being aware of the neural connections we're building. So the awareness comes when you know that you can have a say in how your brain's programmed. You can have a say in the beliefs you have about yourself. You can look at things differently and allow your brain to change based on that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's a good way to explain it to people. I'm sure you get a lot of people that aren't like versed with psychedelics.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get some people that are, but like, I'm sure you get a lot of people that are like, yeah, I've smoked weed a few times.
Right.
But like in college,
right.
you know, it's like, right. I've never taken LSD. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, but what is your belief on God?
Yeah. I mean, wow. Big question, mm-hmm. right? My belief on God, I mean, God, I think, is that word interchangeable to me yeah. within, like, the universe, source, the one consciousness I believe that we're all connected to. Mm-hmm. So I really believe that, you know, when we die, we're going home. We're going back to that one consciousness that we're all connected to. Mm-hmm. I believe that our lives here are experiences that we get to have these individual experiences where we get to be creators of our own realities. We get to be creators in this matrix that we find ourselves in. And if we learn how to do that, if we learn how to work with the matrix and we learn how to be a creator, then we can, you know, like you and I today, you know what right. I mean? We're like creating, we're yeah. creating together, right?
Right.
We met last night and we're like, we're going to do this.
Right away.
You know, that's being like that's being an active creator in your own life and allowing mm-hmm. yourself to follow those
pathways.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. That aren't, you know, you can't really explain them.
No.
And we just want to understand everything and know everything and like plan for everything.
Yeah.
And we're programmed to do all of this.
Yeah.
So unhelpful. So like the work I do is very much deprogramming people.
Yeah.
So they can reprogram themselves.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? It's like, let's deprogram all of your programmings here.
Yeah, let's
get back to
reset.
Like factory
yeah,
reset. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. yeah. And go back to the start because it's not our fault. You know, but what our task here, I believe, is to remember, like mm-hmm. where we came from, to remember the access we have, and we're all on a journey in a different way doing that. Some people get there. Some people start widening their lens and having a bigger awareness on their existence here, and some people never get there, you know, or maybe they'll get there in another life, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
That's interesting.
Anyways, I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, that's a good question.
But...
That's a good answer. Because that's essentially along the lines of what I call it the artist. Mm. I don't really... I feel like God is a... The term God has kind of been captured
to mean some like the Christian God. Like the God is that we describe it as, that the church describes it as, the Catholic Church or whatever the fuck it right. is, like describes it as, that's God. And I feel like that's captured a little bit. And I like to refine it as the artist because it that's what it is. It's I had an LSD experience that I wrote a story about one day that it's essentially the idea that there is this immense power that is a creative force. And I thought, I had this thought that in my experience that it was like, if there is a God, whatever it is truly an artist because this creation is perfect if it allows itself to be.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so if he's, whatever it is, has to be an artist. And then I thought that was where I like fully accepted the artist in myself. Cause it was like, if it's an artist and I was made in its image, then that means if it is there for that, then so am I.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so that was where I was like, okay, fuck it. I'm done trying to make a fucking honest man of myself. I'm going to go be an artist. Like, I have to be. That's my calling.
Right.
And it was like,
so. Arguably all of our callings.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I don't think anyone's calling is going to be a corporate show.
No.
Everyone should create. Whatever that means.
Totally. Whatever that means to you.
You know, like, I have friends that are, my one really good friend, Cooper. Shout out, Cooper. He owns a company called Denver Storm Door. His artist is, this guy thinks about business like I've never met anybody who's thinking about business. Mm-hmm. He's my age and he's just like, you know, all over the place, which is like, oh yeah, with my own company, I've got Crucible Media that we run the podcast and films out of that. Like, he's given me ideas like, oh, you got to go do this and maybe it'll make you some money. And sure enough, if I go do that, it's made me some money.
Right.
And it's like, he's just like, he all over the place with stuff like that. But that's his art, is that he's got this like ability to take, look, if you want to take a business, I can make your business bigger.
Right.
And like, he's an artist with that.
Right.
It's truly his art. He's not really much of a, he's not going to draw you. He's not going to write you anything, but like, he can make your business better.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, so everybody's artist, of course. everybody's art is different, but you got to find what that is, you know?
Right. You do. Yeah. You do. And have to be willing to, that goes back to the programming. It's like willing to, you know, when you do feel that call to do something, we can a lot of times talk ourselves out of it because it's not what we're supposed to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, what?
You'll never make any money making art.
Oh my gosh.
You never make any fucking money making art.
Yeah.
How many fucking times have you heard that?
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And arguably, you won't make any money doing something that's not authentic to yourself. I mean, without a huge cost.
Sure.
Right?
The best money I've ever made in my life, I was the least happy.
Correct.
The least happy because I was making it doing stuff
it
I
in
wasn't.
Other ways.
I wasn't being honest about the way I was making it.
Right.
Like, because I was working for fucking Fortune 500 company I was in sales for some fucking big company, GoDaddy, selling fucking.
The website.
No, I was selling social media marketing. Okay. And like, I was like, at first I was like, oh, this is cool. Yeah, sure. Get good money. Fucking made good money. Got right out of the place I was living into a new place. Like, it's great. And then I like looked at the track record for how we were helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fucking awful. Mm-hmm. We were tanking these people. We were fucking robbing these people blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, no. And I did it for about another month and then I got out of it because I did it for about 6 months total.
Yeah.
But once I found out that we were like fucking people over, I was like, I can't do this in good mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is why I'm so miserable right now, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I got out of it. But, and then I went and fucking, that was right after I got stabbed. I got stabbed in training for that job. Not like during training, but like while I was in it.
Yeah.
And then kind of went off the rails. And then I went and got a job as a valet, high as fuck all the time. And then COVID hit.
Huh.
And it was like, oh, I was there. I was at that job for 5 weeks. Found out that week you need to be at a job for 6 weeks to qualify for unemployment. Didn't have a dime to my name during 2020. Fucking got by literally like stealing bread to feed myself type thing.
Wow.
And like, you know, selling fucking... buying 2 grams of cocaine, selling one of them for more than I paid, that type of thing.
Right,
like fucking
right.
Just bad shit. And then I eventually like, I did this Molly experience where I took like literally a fucking rock about that big. I just ate it. And then during the Molly experience, I was looking at myself in the mirror like, you're way too smart to be wasting this shit, dude. What are you doing? Right. Like having this full conversation with myself in the mirror and just like, you should go back to college. And it was like, it just that right alone. Because I also thought of it like, you know, if you could go back to college, you could kind of kill two birds with one stone here. You could, I like to say, get two birds stoned at once. But you could do that because, you know, that's, you can take student loans out and have money to pay your rent and shit and pay all your bills and whatnot. You can have student loans to do that. And you can get this fucking piece of paper you've been trying to get for the past, but have just called off the walls on because it's like, feels too hard. And so I just fucking went back to online school and at a community college in Austin, just like.
So, I mean, it sounds like all of these horrible experiences, quote unquote, horrible. Sure. Were gifts, would that be fair to say, in the grand scheme of things?
I think I had mentioned this when we were talking before we started, that I tend to now see things as everything I've been through is preparing me for stuff in the future.
Yeah.
And in order to make me a stronger man.
Right.
And I've been through a fuckload. I'm sure you'll listen to some of these podcasts before, but when you leave, but it's like, you'll hear some stuff where, and I'm sure I'll tell you other stuff too, that it's just like, dude, I've been a mess my whole life. Mm. Only the past couple of years I've been like picking up the pieces of the destruction I made. And like, I've recently got to a point where I've like, I've got all the pieces in my hands.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there with it. I'm like, okay, we can reassemble. Yeah. And like, it's like, you know, it is what it is. It sucks to be, I had to delete Instagram recently because of a couple things, but one of the reasons was I was seeing people from back home that were my same age, way more successful like physically than I was, and I was like feeling bad about it. And I realized like, look, you have no reason to feel bad about this, so you should just delete this app, not look at this shit, and work on what you're working on,
right?
And like, you'll eventually get to this point,
right?
And yeah,
well, there's two things there. It's like, first of all, the programming of where we should be at this age,
should
right?
be should yeah, whatever should could whatever.
But then also there was one other thing about it.
What part of it?
Well, you were saying, I just lost it.
No worries. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Say like seeing people from back home that are ahead of you.
Yeah. Seeing people from back home that are ahead of you. Oh yes, thank you. You're seeing what they have as like tangible, like. Tangible things like money or house or car or whatever, yeah. Right? But you have so much internal. You have so much internal, like, what do we call it? Capital, right? Like, capital is, you know, we see it as just like money. We can. We're programmed to see it as capital being just money.
It's a very materialistic society.
Right. Mm. But capital, really, there's so much more capital. And we, as people who are, you know, waking up over and over and over and over and over again, you know, as we do, there's so much like wealth in that.
Yeah.
Like arguably way more wealth than money could ever give you. You can't buy that kind of wealth. No, you know,
well, money, they say money can't buy happiness. Right. And then people have always said, I've never seen anyone be sad on a jet ski. And that is a funny response to that.
But like, I mean, honestly, that's a good point. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a good point.
But yeah, but it's like, it's.
But if you, and I work with a lot of clients like this who have all the money, who have the cars, who have the this, who have the that, and they're miserable.
They fucking hate themselves.
They're miserable.
They sold their souls. It's like.
They're like, I thought that this was going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. I don't even drive this expensive car that I have.
No, it sits there and I pay insurance on it. It's like, fuck. That was $1,200 a month. It's like.
Literally. And there's a lot of rich people in this world that are like that. And that are arguably so poor.
And all of them run the world.
Yeah. Yes, and that. Right.
But yeah, it's, and like also the other side of that is the stuff you see on Instagram is the only part of those people's lives you see.
And that's what they're but showing.
They're
you.
Just manicured seeing, highlight reels. And honestly, yeah. same with mine. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Well, I try to be vulnerable and put some real stuff on there. But listen, it's also like a way that you can sort of actually be a creator of the reality you're imagining for yourself, sure. right? Like yeah. if I look at my Instagram, I'm like, oh, look at me. I want to see myself in this way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that helps with the way I'm seeing my reality, and people use that.
That is true.
I mean, it's just, you know, little life hack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hack. Make your own reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Use Instagram. Make your own reality.
That should be their slogan.
Honestly, it really should.
What is?
Really,
I don't know what their slogan is, but that should be it. Like,
create your own reality yeah. at Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just if don't sponsor us if you want to sponsor us. Yeah, no, Meta. Yeah. Fuck you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, what he said.
I think Zuckerberg's faking it. Zuckerberg's faking his conservative fucking mm-hmm. rebound, or whatever he's going to call it. Like, fuck you, dude.
Right.
You're lying.
Right.
I watched all the interviews. You're lying through your teeth. Right. Anyway, whatever. The guy's an alien. Never seen a person surf weirder than that.
Oh, that's what's really on the forefront of your mind with him.
That was the first thing.
That's what really
peeked me off to he's an alien.
Yeah.
Watching a video of him surf. Because I grew up in California. Like, it's like surfing's a part of the state. And it's like, I didn't do a ton of surfing growing up, but I've definitely gone and hung out with people surfing. And those people shred. I've seen Zuckerberg surf. Zuckerberg's not a shredder. Zuckerberg is no shredder. He shreds no gnar. But he's, you know, he's out there, I guess. But it's like,
it's very suspicious, everyone.
Everybody's, he's so suspicious. I'm very suspicious of Zuckerberg, but it's, it is what it is. What's your favorite writer? Like, yeah.
Andrea Gibson.
Interesting. I don't think I've
Andrea
read
Gibson is a poet, and they okay. just died actually this past July.
Oh no.
I hope I'm not getting that wrong. They are one of like the greatest writers to me. Poems a lot about, you know, dying, our existence, relationship with our body, grief, you know, loss, transitions. They had cancer for a very long time and like really died, like, you know, was actively dying for a very long time. And so just very profound. There's this poem, A Love Letter from the Afterlife. I actually
love,
you'll have to check that out. It's, it talks about how, like, I think one of the first lines is like, I haven't really left. I'm just in the next room. You know, I'm more with you.
That's really profound.
I'm more with you than I ever was.
That's really profound.
I'm more a part of you than I ever was. You know, you death doesn't mean you could ever lose me. Like that's really the message of that poem, is that is the beauty of grief and the beauty of connection and the beauty of loss. It's like so beautiful, and it's a part of what we get to experience here is loss.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So many ways. But yeah, they do a really good job at speaking to all of those.
How old were they when they passed?
Honestly, they lived in Boulder.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And
older, younger.
I think like in their 40s.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, it sucks, dude. I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Like a talented artist passes it fucking before.
But it's the
50,
impact.
Even.
But
it, like,
but the impact has been,
that's
I
true.
Mean,
beyond their years.
Beyond.
That's cool.
I mean, beyond. And like, I do a lot of work with grief and loss and things that they speak about. And so after they passed, I started, you know, I have my own spiritual practice where I try to be a creator in my own life. So I call on my guides and call on people like Andrea, who
That's
can,
really cool.
you know, help support me in like moments or times where I need to make an impact on people, and I need, it's bigger than me. It's not just the information that comes out of me a lot of the time, I feel, is coming from somewhere else. Like, it's, I don't know how I have such access to all of it.
Sure.
I'm grateful for the access.
Right.
But yeah, it feels very bigger than me sometimes. And I feel like it's connecting with people like my sister, Andrea.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever else is up there, over there, it's in there, in the next room, you know?
Yeah, yeah, literally, yeah.
Whatever else. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is really cool. I'm glad you brought that up, because I haven't heard her or them or whatever you said. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
I haven't heard them, and I always like finding new writers, especially poets, because poetry is weird how I never really, like, as a child growing up, I was like, poetry, whatever. And then I was like, oh, music is poetry. And then I was like, okay, poetry's kind of cool. And then I was like starting to write poetry, and I was like, oh, okay, poetry is awesome. Like, yeah. You can do so much with poems. Because it's like, I like to write, I think it's called free form poetry. Mm. So it's just basically a fucking story that is a short story. Mm-hmm. It's like a page and a half.
Yeah.
And I've written some interesting ones that I think are good, but it's like, you know, I never really do anything with them. I just kind of keep them to myself.
Well, I mean, you don't need to do anything, right?
No.
It's like that programming that we need to do something with our creation. Like, we have to in order for them to mean something. It's right? Yeah.
I've thought about this, though, is that I would like to have a collection of them that I publish.
Okay.
And, like, in a, you know, little short book type thing that just have 50 copies of.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Yeah.
But, like, I talked to you a little bit about the movie we're making earlier. I think it was last night that I talked about it. And it's based on a short story that my buddy wrote, Travis. Shout out Travis. He does a podcast called Pumpkin Hill Radio.
Oh, cool.
He wrote this little short horror story, and then, you know, it wasn't poetry, but it was definitely like a little novel, like a little beginning. If he'd filled in 40 more pages, it'd be a little novel. Mm. It's 20 pages, but it's like, you know, and the short story could have gone a bunch of different ways, but it was what it was, and right. I made it into a little screenplay, and you know, we shot a movie out of it. It's like, I kind of forgot where I was going with that.
Well, the creations becoming creations,
right.
Something like that.
I forget exactly what, but that actually brings me to another point. This particular creation, this Night Cook movie is what it's called, is kind of a weird creation because it feels like it's alive on its own.
Yeah, remind me, because I was really intrigued when you told me what it was about.
Honestly. So it's basically, long story short, it's an alien abduction story set in a retirement
home. In a retirement
home. Yeah, yeah.
Right, which is arguably the best time you could get abducted, is when you're in a retirement home, you know?
Not
it's
if
like,
you're Gary, our main character.
Okay.
It was a weird time for him.
Okay, got it,
Yeah. Garfield Anderson is the main character's name. But he had a weird time with it. You'll get to see it eventually.
Cool.
And, but yeah, it's it feels like it's alive in its own way, like it's like unborn alive kind of thing, because every single time that something went wrong with it, something else fixed it better.
Mm.
Every single time.
Mm.
Every single time that something was like, someone dropped out. Oh, well, we got another guy that, 5 minutes later, we had another person call, hey, are you guys any work, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Whoa.
Right, every time. But that's the trusting and everything unfolding and... That kind of reminds me of one of my other favorite quotes, which is, the obstacle is the path.
Oh.
The obstacle is the path. It's the way it's supposed to go.
The hard road.
It seems like an obstacle, but it's not.
Oh, interesting.
It's the way it's supposed to happen.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So, like,
yeah.
You weren't supposed to work with whoever that person was. You were supposed to work with this other person that you got in connection with. You know, that was the path. So the obstacle, quote-unquote, is the path.
That's super interesting, actually. You've got some good quotes. Fire quotes.
Listen, I got to listen.
Yeah.
You know,
it's better than my favorite.
Where would that came from?
Hell yeah. My favorite writer, speaking of that, is I love Hunter S. Thompson. I got a poster up there.
Oh, yeah.
He's hilarious. And one of my favorite quotes out of his has nothing to do with anything, but it's a very true quote. It's from the Kentucky Derby is Decadent and Depraved article that he wrote for Rolling Stone, I think, in like the 60s. And one of the lines is, any man that walks around saying, hell yes, I'm from Texas, deserves whatever happens to him. It's to say, like, dude, people are going to come in and beat the fuck out of you someday. And you deserve every fucking penny of that. Or people are going to be like, oh, yeah, cool, he's from Texas. And you deserve every penny of that, too.
Huh.
It's like, any man that just walks around with the fucking like, oh, this is where I'm from. This is, I'm from fucking Texas and you're in fucking Chicago.
Yeah.
No one gives a fuck you're from Texas and Chicago. Right. Like, get the fuck out of here, dude. That's the idea of it. Is yeah, like, so, yeah. That's one of my favorite hard quotes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You've made it a part of your whole identity there.
Yeah. I'm from Texas. It's like, okay.
But so, we do. We latch on to things like that.
I remember when I moved to Texas, I was latched on to California.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
It, like, your identity, yeah, it helps you, like, right, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But then that's what's cool is we get to choose what we want to identify with as part of our identity and leave the rest. And that's the trick, right, is leaving the rest.
Yeah, leaving the parts that aren't necessary.
Yeah, and forgiving the parts, like, forgiving the unnecessary things and how long you kept them around. You know, people have a lot of shame for, like, how long they've been mad at themselves for this thing. You know what I mean? It's like they're mad at themselves for something, but then they have so much shame for being mad for so long. You know what I mean?
That doesn't.
And then it just never helps.
You got to just let it go, dude. You got to just push it behind.
Yeah, you got to just, you know, forgive yourself, move on, and see it as a gift. Like, how can you alchemize it into something else, mm-hmm. right?
That's absolutely what it is, alchemy.
We can do that all the time.
Speaking of alchemy, that is, we talked a little bit about, I mean, obviously we met at a show last night. We were talking a little bit about music.
Yeah.
I mentioned you, I was a big Billy Strings fan.
Yeah.
I had mentioned it on this podcast before that what Billy Strings is doing live is alchemy. Mm. It's wizardry. Mm. Whatever he's doing is he's conjuring some sort of spell every single time he fucking plays that guitar. It's insane. And that's like, I love it when an artist does that. I love when an artist spins his creation and just keeps going with it. And that's the beauty of Billy's 3-hour live shows, is that the creation just gets spun and spun and spun and spun. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're just in this like raucous fucking place. And then it just comes crashing down. It's even. It's like a wave. Like, I remember the last show I was at, he played a part called Spinning, which is like a description of a DMT experience he had. And it's very weird. It's a very weird song. And the person I was with at the time, like, literally reached over to me and she was like, I'm scared, dude. She was like, because, like, the lights were going in circles and, like, you know, it felt like you were spinning. And then, like, also, like, the lights were, like, this far apart from each other. So, it, like, Billy looked like he was in stop motion. And it was just, like, it was strange, man. Huh. And then it comes crashing down. Do you know the song Planet Caravan?
No.
It's by Black Sabbath. It's an Ozzy Osbourne song. That's the song they played when one of the Apollo missions, when they crashed down into the water. And they were kind of like knocked out a little bit. They like played it to wake them up. It's called Planet Caravan. And it's basically a song about drifting through the universe and everything's going to be all right type thing. Mm. And it's like, so to come out of this like intense spinning cycle to Planet Caravan, it was like kind of a symbolic thing where it was like,
totally,
it's, like, we're good, man.
It's literally fine.
And we're good, man.
Just like
keep it going.
Don't resist it. Just like, let it be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, it'll lead me to my final quote of the day here, which is, the resistance is the pain.
Great quote. I think we'll get out of here on that. That was a great, this is a great podcast. We've done about 53
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Everybody, why don't you plug yourself? What do you got?
Yeah. So higherhealing.co is my website, inspired by Remy on Instagram. So you can see my curated life that I've created on Instagram. And find higherhealing@gmail.com if anyone wants to reach out for inquiries. You can also reach out on my website too.
Right on.
Yeah.
And your name again? Alex Kirshner. Alex Kirshner, everybody. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Again, this is Malfunction Junction Podcast. You can find us at Malfunction Junction Podcast on Instagram, which I'll be downloading again soon. You can email us at malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions, concerns, comments, or you'd like to come on the podcast. And keep on contact with Crucible_Media on Instagram as well for updates on Night Cook. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.